Welcome to Listener's Voices, episode number 8. This is Fran, one of your hosts, joined by...
Francis.
Yes. And subject for the day today is first jobs. People have made contributions about what their first jobs and some other miscellaneous later jobs, and some of them are going to elicit some commentary from me possibly about other jobs. But before we get on to that, we want to share something that Becky contributed. Becky and Orlean, this goes back to our businesses lost and longed for episodes. She made a contribution at that time, as did many of you, and she had some afterthoughts about that. So while we're thinking of it, I want to share that with you right now. Another business I miss in Two Harbors that was not mentioned was Gould Jewelry. It shared the building next to where North Shore Horizons is now with a barbershop, also gone. Now Ascend Services is in that building. I only went into the jewelry shop a few times to get help with a watch battery. I remember there was nice china on display as well as actual jewelry. Like so many other businesses, trends changed and people were more likely to go shop in Duluth. And there were a lot of people like me who appreciated the service being there but didn't contribute much to the revenue. And I count myself among them as well. I think I did the very same thing. Got some watch repair done there. Maybe a little bit beyond the replacing the battery, but whatever. We didn't do enough to keep them here. And I think it had a really long history in Two Harbors as well. So thank you, Becky. That reminds me to tell people that you're always welcome to make more submissions on previous subjects. So we started out with the weird winter, had a couple episodes about that, and it continues to be a little bit weird, I guess.
Very sad today when my snow melted.
Oh, your snow melted?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, I still have...
I've got enough, but it's not skiable anymore, so...
Oh, well, you'll have to come up to my place if you can get up there soon enough. So I had... I'm about 12 miles inland as the crow flies, and... I think I got about 17 inches or so, 17 and a half inches, I think it totaled up to. It's settled down now to about 14, but it's nice snow, too. It's not wet or slushy. It's just really good snow. So I've been snowshoeing on it, and at least there would be one loop that I've snowshoed on that would be decent skiing.
Good. I'll look
forward to it. Yeah. And then, let's see, we had an episode about people's favorite songs or songs they identified with. And then a couple episodes on this subject of businesses we remember from the old days in Two Harbors and businesses that we wish would either come back or come here for the first time. And all those episodes are archived on our website, ktwh.org. There's a programs menu across the top, and if you click on that, you'll find listeners' voices in the drop-down. So you want to give people the specs on... how they can take part in this before we start sharing submissions?
So, we solicit answers to our weekly prompts, and then we compile them and share them with you on this show. Our next prompt for listeners' voices will be?
Another week of jobs.
Another week of jobs. So this will be two in a row also. It's a good theme. Send your responses to this prompt to ktwhwriters@gmail.com. or bring them to the station at the Harbor Landing Building, whether they're written or recorded. Voice memos, if they're recorded, from a smartphone work when they are sent as attachments to an email. Mm-hmm. We will air your replies anonymously, if you prefer, on Listeners' Voices at 11 a.m. Saturdays, and again on the replay at 9 p.m. Mondays. Questions may be addressed to ktwhwriters@gmail.com. And all previous shows are archived on the station's website, ktwh.org, under the program's drop-down tabs.
Indeed. And we also welcome more ideas for prompts. We've pretty much been going with 2 weeks to a prompt to give people time to think about what they hear the first week, and maybe it will inspire them to make their own contribution by the next week. We're kind of going back and forth on if that's a good idea or not, but for the time being, we'll do that. We didn't have, well, I don't know. This will add up to maybe comparable to previous episodes of submissions on this one. We'll count them up later and find out, I guess. Mostly recorded ones. We have two written ones. And I think we're ready to start out here, I guess. And since we just heard from Becky Norlin with her afterthoughts about the businesses, we'll hear from her about her first job.
This is Becky in Two Harbors. The prompt this week is my first job. I had home chores as a young person, like most kids do, and I did a little bit of babysitting, and once in a while I helped my brother with his paper route. And I have great memories of my brothers and I sawing wood at the cabin, two of us on either side of a swede saw while the third sat on the log. So all of those were interesting starts. My first paid job, or sort of paid, was when I was a junior in high school. I was at Oak Grove Lutheran School and made some money toward my tuition by helping in the cafeteria. I helped on the serving line and then washed down all the tables after the meal. It wasn't very many hours and it wasn't hard. It was a good introduction to the world of work, that you have to show up on time, that you have to be part of a team, that you keep going and doing something, especially when you don't particularly want to. I remember that with the wiping down of tables, just kind of slogging along as like, okay, I've got three more to do or whatever. And so it was, you know, it was a fine introduction to the world of work.
Thank you, Becky. I think someone else mentions babysitting, if not more than one. And did you ever do any babysitting?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Oh, yes, lots of babysitting.
Oh, I did very little. I think I didn't take too well.
I was a very, I was a good babysitter. I was diligent and people could rely on me. And I was, I guess, a little bit too bossy. I didn't get any autonomy in my own home.
Ah,
so I liked ordering other people's lives.
Exercise it
and
there.
Children were great prey for that.
Oh, boy. Oh.
No, I treated them all very well.
So, yeah, I tended to avoid the babysitting thing, I think, but Becky mentioned the paper route, too, and I don't remember if I ever had my own, but my brother had a paper route, and I helped him with that, and I have really fond memories of the Sunday mornings. I guess it was just, I think he did the afternoon paper himself, but then Sunday mornings I helped him because they were so big, and we would take the wagon down, and I remember pulling it through the street. I just really, it was the only thing, if it hadn't been for that, I don't know when I would have been up in the wee hours.
On Sundays?
On Sundays especially, yeah. And just walking around the neighborhood. And
it's nice to discover those times.
Yeah.
Quiet and the...
Right, yeah.
The light.
And I can still see the light, the kind of the, just the barely dawning. I don't remember how much in the winter. It must have been a lot in the dark. Anyway, it was a really good experience, and I think Becky's maybe the only other person to mention paper routes in her early days. It doesn't exactly count as a job, nor the babysitting, but it certainly is part of our formative.
Why doesn't it? Why doesn't it?
I think it definitely
counts.
It would get into the technicalities of...
So I was trying to decide what stories I would tell, and I was going to tell one story, but it was the first job I got for myself once I was out of the house.
Mm.
So I've had a multitude of different jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was going to just tell that story because I thought that would be my first real job.
Sure.
But I've had so many jobs before that.
Hmm. Well, it's up to you. Everybody has their own interpretation of it.
Yeah.
So when are you going to tell us this story?
Oh, since we have this prompt next week, it'll be here next week for
okay.
sure.
Okay, good. Good. Okay, well, the wiping off the tables and so forth that Becky had to do reminded me of Richmond, and we get a good lesson in this submission in how to mop a floor. So let's hear from Richmond.
Hello, everyone. This is Richmond, and I am answering to the prompt, what was my first job and what was it like, for good, better, or worse? Well, I'm not really sure when my first job actually was. I was thinking I probably at some point took care of children when I was still a child. Does that count as a job, taking care of your younger siblings? No, I think not. Well, then the next job would have been when I was 14 or so, working in a truck farm, picking radishes and strawberries for the end of the summer months. I think I made 35 cents an hour, but I don't really count that as my first job either. What do I count as my first job? Well, I count as my first job working at the Black Steer Restaurant in Anoka, Minnesota. The Black Steer. It was an iconic restaurant. It had a large statue of a black steer on top of the roof, and it served hamburgers, french fries, malts, shakes, chicken, all sorts of good things. Well, I went there for my first interview, and a woman there interviewed me. She was the owner, and I think that she was probably about as old as I am right now. Anyway, she said, "Here, you want this job? Pick up a mop. Show me how you mop this floor." Well, I picked up that long, stringy cloth mop. I put it in the mop bucket. I wrung out all the water. I placed that mop down on the floor, and then I mopped it horizontally, back and forth in a figure eight, back and forth, and then walking backwards and pulling towards myself. After about five steps, she told me to stop, and she said, "You have the job. You wouldn't believe how many people I've interviewed that don't know how to properly mop a floor."
M, I say M-O, M-O-P, M-O-P-P, mop, M-O-P-P, mop, 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 R, I say R-A, R-A-G, R-A-G-G, rag. R-A-G-G-M-O-P-P, rag mop, doo-doo-da-dee-a-da, 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 R-A-G-G-M-O-P-P, rag mop. C, A, B, C, D, A, B, C, D, E, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I say M, O, M, O, P, M, O, P, P, mop, M, O, P, P, mop, 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 R, I say R, A, R-A-G, R-A-G-G, rag, R-A-G-G, M-O-P-P, rag, mop, doo-doo-da.
Okay, that goes out to Richmond. Thank you for your lesson. I hope everyone listened carefully if you have to apply for a job mopping the floor ever.
Well, sometimes you just need to mop the floor as part of your job, and that can be a make or break.
Yeah. Indeed. So, I know Richmond's had a rich and varied life as well, as both of us have done many different jobs. So we're trying to keep it to the early jobs here, but looking forward at some time, we do look forward to an episode on maybe the worst job ever or jobs we have quit and why. And I immediately had a candidate come to mind for that when we first mentioned that possibility. Now, this is Andrea here has some unique
Andrea
things.
Murphy. She's a dear friend of mine. And when I heard her submission, I was duly impressed. She seems to just have welcomed every experience that she's had come along. She's a very enthusiastic person to begin with. But I think you'll get a little taste of that here.
Okay. And as well as quite a variety, too.
A wide variety.
Right. Here we go with her.
I had several first jobs. I'd say the very first was babysitting. But when I was 15, my official first job was at a theriogenologist. That's a reproductive large animal vet. So they specialized in breeding horses and cattle, primarily, I think, through artificial insemination. And my job was to do administrative work, mostly paperwork for the vet, so he could get his hands dirty. And I actually had a few jobs at the time. I worked at a pizza place and then babysitting and then the theriogenologist. And I know there was one other, but I can't think of it right now because I've had like 32 jobs now. Anyways, the vet's wife came in one day early on and said, I need you to stop your paperwork and clean some equipment for me. I'll let you know what this is when you're done. And she pointed to one of the tools. And anyways, turned out it was the AV, also known as the artificial vagina. So that was how they collected semen from bulls and or horses. So other than that, a pizza place. That was my other kind of first job. And I don't know. I loved it. I loved having jobs. I loved working. Every kid loves freedom, but being 15 and having responsibility and money, it was pretty amazing. The rest of the jobs were so much fun too. I had a job tagging fish at the dam where we capture about 500 of them on one side and we put radio tags in them, then let them loose and capture them on the other side of the dam to check how much damage they got going through the dam. I worked at a zoo, worked at a work warehouse, and I worked at a coal mine, and I got to say fire in the hole when the blaster blasted thousands and thousands of pounds of explosives into the ground and out of the ground, and it was amazing. So anyways, lots of fun jobs, lots and lots. I painted houses, I broke colts, rode young horses. I rode horses for other people through the sale yard. That was really fun. And now I'm an artist, so there's plenty more jobs in between, but I think that's the majority of the interesting ones, and I don't regret a single one. Every single one of them had so much to offer, and it was awesome.
Yes, Andrea's a very talented artist. She's a painter, mostly, and recently sent me an edition of a pack of cards that she's made. And each card has a different image painted onto it. And my little dog, Colin, happens to feature in her deck of cards.
So. Sweet.
Yeah.
Well, she's lucky. She hasn't regretted any of her jobs. We won't recruit her for the worst job ever episode.
Oh, I doubt she doesn't have one of those.
We'll see. So we only have two written submissions this week, but let's hear from one of them.
Judy Sawson. Does babysitting count? I think we've covered that. Yeah. At 15 years old, I started babysitting for neighbors' children, mostly in the evening when parents wanted a night out. Babysitting rates at the time were 50 cents an hour. Most of the kids were good, went to bed after nighttime story and stayed there. Others would get up for drinks of water, or they were hungry or had excuses they could think of. If parents were going to be late getting home, I would often fall asleep on the couch in the living room after the kids were settled. I remember one occasion especially. The parents told me that they knew there was a mouse running around the house, so if I saw it, I shouldn't be alarmed. Indeed, the mouse decided to check me out as I saw it, as I was watching TV in the living room. He peeked out from under a chair, then scampered back. I told him he should stay under his chair, and we would get along fine. He was a cooperative mouse, and I didn't see him for the rest of the evening. My first real job, the summer after my junior year in high school, was at the candy counter at Kresge's Dime Store. We weren't supposed to eat any of the candy, but I know that sometimes I would sneak a piece or two of my favorite kinds.
So that reminded me of not my first job, but I had a job for about a month at a candy store in Minneapolis, Abdallah's, and they still make excellent candy. You can get it at Anderson Greenhouse, as a matter of fact, individual wrapped ones. But actually, my job was at their ice cream counter. And
yes.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you if you ever scooped ice cream.
Uh-huh. And that's why I had to quit after a month. I wouldn't allow myself to even start having ice cream on my breaks or eating it because I knew I would just go crazy. So I saved it all up. I can't remember actually exactly why all I quit that job, but one of the stress factors was being around all that ice cream and not being able to eat any. So the last day, what I knew was my last day because I wasn't fired. I was planning to leave the job. I made the most spectacular sundae ever.
Mm.
I don't know, I suppose.
All the accoutrements in front of you to choose
yes,
from.
Yep, it was fantastic because I knew I wouldn't ever have another chance. So thanks for that, inspiring that memory, Judy. Sneaking a little chocolate or candy there on the sides, yeah. This next one, we heard from Adriana last week, the week before, last week, I think. This is Adriana, who ended up getting dragged around her yard, her snowy yard, by her goat. And I happened to see her this week as well. And I like this because her first job ended up leading to her whole work history, her whole career. So we'll hear about that now from Adriana. So what was your first job, Adriana?
Well, I just graduated from high school. I was 17, and I knew I needed to get a job. So I went to the employment office, and they said there's some jobs up at the state hospital.
Because you were living in Faribault.
I lived in Faribault, right. Minnesota. And they, so I went up there. I had no experience. And they were doing a program for, it was like a nurse's aid job. And you had some training. They would train you to work in the hospital. And they were just starting a class. It would have been in June. And so me and a class of, I don't know how many people there were. There must have been, I don't know, 20 to 30 people. We started, it was I don't even remember how long the class lasted. We're going to learn to be, I think they called it psychiatric aides or something like that. It was like a nurse's aide job. They trained us so we could work in the... It was mostly the people that were there weren't mentally ill as much as they were people that had Down syndrome and that kind of thing. But back then, it was hard to tell who was going to be, who the patients were going to be. They've since closed that facility.
Did that have a role in you becoming an LPN?
Probably, yeah, because I didn't want to work there forever. And, you know, I'd never had a job before. So, but, yeah, it did have a role in me becoming an RN, an LPN, and then an RN.
Mm-hmm.
I eventually went to Rochester, Minnesota, for the LPN program and then went on to be an RN.
Yeah, Lake Superior College.
Yep. Mm. So
your first job got you started.
Got me started and didn't pay very much, but I learned a lot. And it got me out of my hometown.
Yeah.
So that was good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a good a good example of a first job,
mm-hmm.
starting you on your career path.
Yeah.
Which included camp counselor, camp nurse.
Yes. Mm-hmm. A few years after that, I applied for a camp nurse position once I was in Rochester, and that was nice. It was something a little different along the way.
Ultimately led to us meeting each other through mutual friends. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Adriana.
Mm-hmm.
Not many people are lucky enough, I think, to take their first job and run with it.
Really?
So she's now retired. And a good mutual friend of Adriana's and mine is Kathy. And Kathy contributed to our Animal Companions episode.
Was it anonymously, though?
Kathy's wasn't, no.
No, good.
No, she talked.
Maybe there was a little disclosure there.
She talked about Cosmo.
Oh, Cosmo, yes.
Great. And Kathy had also been an MC for one of our cabin fever relievers a few years ago. She's a great MC for any occasion. She can come up with songs and jokes and things just right off the top of her head. So this is just about her first job down in St. Louis Park.
It really wasn't much to my first job, but my first job was working at a drive-in, a place you drive in and get food, a drive-in food restaurant. I did not wear any roller skates. No roller skates were involved. It was in St. Louis Park. And it was a big hangout place, so I used to, go up there when I was 13 and 14 and just kind of hanging out up there. And then I think when I turned 15, they said, well, if you want a job, we can give you a job here. So that's where it was, and a lot of people came, and a lot of kids came and hung out there. And sometimes the police would come and just check on things, so I had a feeling there were some other things going on up there, but I had no idea what those things were. And so it was a good first job, taught me responsibility. I probably made like 50 cents an hour or something. This was back in the early 70s. And after that, I went on to jobs that I liked a little bit more and paid me a little bit more money, but I was happy to have my first job, and I think I was 15 years old. So that was it.
Wasn't Porky's, was it?
It wasn't Porky's, no. I think it was called the Oak Hill Drive-In in St. Louis Park.
Ah. I thought it was funny she had to explain what a drive-in is, as I did last week when I was talking about taking the goats to a drive-in. We don't really have that, do we, anymore?
I don't know of any.
Yeah.
Every once in a while I'll see an A&W strung across the country still.
Right. There's at least one up on the Iron Range. And that might, they still have the canopy kind of thing that the people who brought your food out to the car would walk under and then go, the microphones were connected.
There's a modern day one, and I'm failing to remember the name of it.
Hmm. Yeah, it's funny. My sister had a job at a drive-in well before me. She was a few years older than I. And remember, it would have a tray. Then they'd bring out a tray, and the tray would hang on your window. And it's just,
well, now it's drive-thrus, and you've got to get out of the way.
Right. That's. I guess that's probably why we don't have the drive-ins anymore. Mm-hmm. At the drive-thrus. Yeah, I guess it's progress. and a lot of people. Seems like everybody, not everybody, but several of us have gotten our first jobs around age 15 or 16, and that was true for me. I don't remember exactly which year. I think I was in my junior year. So this is another written submission here from yours truly. Actually, I had submitted this to the KGUA program when they had this same topic, the same prompt, a couple of weeks ago. And I submitted it as a written one, and Peggy Berryhill read it for me. But she misnamed the shopping center that's involved, and I thought it was very important to get that right. So I'm reading it myself rather than playing her recording of my submission. So my first job was at Southdale Shopping Center in Edina, Minnesota, a suburb of Minneapolis. It has the claim to fame of being the first and oldest enclosed shopping mall in the United States. It opened in 1956 and is still functioning with nearly 30 acres of retail space. It's not something I would choose to identify with at this point in my life and in our culture, but I remember our family driving out to watch in awe as it gradually emerged from the landscape, and its grand opening was a huge deal. In 1965, I got my first part-time job there while still in high school. It was at the Toy Fair, I believe a standalone business, not part of a chain, just in time for the Christmas season. The owner-manager was a woman, probably in her 50s, very strict and skeptical of letting anyone else operate the till. Plus, she had trouble relating to an introverted student who probably wasn't sufficiently prodding the customers to consume. But as the season intensified, she finally had to risk empowering me to check out people's purchases. It was a tense day, that first day, and of course this was before anything electronic. I don't remember if the cash register even calculated the change. I think it might have only totaled the purchases. So things came to a head at the end of the day as the manager counted up the balance in the till against the known starting amount and the total purchases. I distinctly remember that as being possibly the first time I earned an adult's respect, strictly on my own merits. It must have come out right on the nose because she was sufficiently impressed to invite me to stay on after the holiday season. Her attitude toward me completely pivoted as of that reckoning. I worked through the end of the school year. I remembered that manager's name for a long time, and not just because she came to appreciate me. I was also impressed with such a strong woman manager, not a common role model in that era, even if her priorities were a bit skewed, I see now in retrospect. So, yep, the Toy Fair. And I've been working on remembering that woman's name, and it's going to come to me as soon as this episode is recorded, I'm sure. So, let's see. I guess that brings us to Shane. And this Shane, you will recognize his voice if you're a regular listener to KTWH. He does the Northwoods Archive on the first Mondays of the month. When we started out way back in 2015, Shane did Northwoods Archive every week. And then he moved a little too far away to make that very convenient for him. But he was also on a founding board of the radio station, was on the board for many years, and was our music director from the beginning. He's also been a storyteller during our Cabin Fever Relievers, but this is the story of his first job.
In 1988, Covington, Kentucky had the reputation as the armpit of Cincinnati. Only the brave few ventured across the ancient suspension bridge to take advantage of the cut-rate booze and cigarettes on offer in the grimy bottle shop south of the Ohio River. But the hipster Covington of today had to start sometime, perhaps with the opening of the Coach and Four restaurant, which claimed that Cincinnati's best restaurant isn't in Cincinnati. Boldly situated a block from the county clink and roughly equidistant from competing tobacconists, whose long-standing feud regularly resulted in street-side fisticuffs and on occasion brandishing of weapons, the Coach and Four served a high-end clientele who found it a bit thrilling to risk a trip across the river to sumptuate in sautéed monkfish with water chestnuts or pecan chicken in Dijon cream sauce. I started as busboy, but was soon promoted to assistant waiter. I helped to greet and show guests to their tables, fill water glasses, bring fresh bread, provide condiments, and promptly clear away used plates. My job was to engage with guests in a friendly and polite manner, responding to any requests quickly and appropriately. But I would come to learn that there was a certain class of customer for whom this maxim didn't hold true. I recognized the family, not because I knew them, but because I'd seen them before. At school, in the grocery store, on the Covington streets I biked every day, in my own family, in the mirror. They'd cleaned up for what was surely a special celebration dinner of some sort, a good report card maybe, kids in their church clothes, hair combed and mostly lying flat, Dad with a fresh shirt tucked into a pair of well-worn Wranglers and Mom in a new-looking dress. But in spite of the effort, it was clear they weren't the Coach's target patron. far from white Izod sweaters and Etienne Egner handbags. Here were grimed fingernails and snotty noses. Her overdone perfume, his Marlboro reek. The maitre d' saw them coming a mile away. As the family made their way conspicuously through the short breezeway to the host's podium, he took me aside and instructed me to seat them in the upstairs section. It was Friday, but early yet, and the main dining room wasn't even half full. Unaccustomed to my hesitation at being given an instruction, the maitre d' extended a long finger toward the unlit hallway that led to the little-used upper dining room. He glared. I jogged that way to turn on the lights. The space was clearly used, with large boxes of to-go containers stacked along the back wall and several overturned chairs awaiting repair. I was just shoving together two foretops as the family emerged into the room. I realized how cold it was up there. I'll turn the heat up, I muttered as I pulled out their chairs. I brought them water and two baskets of bread. After seeing to my other tables, I went back upstairs to check on the family and saw that the waiter had yet to take up the menus. I watched the unhurried waitstaff for a few minutes downstairs, then took up the menus myself, along with a couple more baskets of bread. I apologized for the delay and took their drink orders, but already I could see that the dad, into his third cigarette, could read the situation. How couldn't he? Forget it, he said. We're out of here. I tried to soothe him, but what was there to say? Look, thanks for taking care of us, he said, cigarette pinched between his lips, and reached out his right hand toward me. When we shook, I felt that he'd passed me something, a folded piece of paper. As the family bundled down the stairs away from the fancy restaurant and toward a safer place, a friendlier place, a better place, perhaps Frisch's Big Boy or Dixie Chili, I looked down to see what he'd given me. It was a $50 bill.
If you please, waiter hollered down the hall, you get no bread with one meatball. One meatball. One meatball. Get no bread with one meatball. The little man felt very bad. One meatball was all that he had. In his dreams, he hears that call. You get no bread with one meatball. One meatball. One meatball. Get no bread with one meatball. One meatball was all that he had. One meatball. It was so very sad. Yeah.
red with Juanito. Get no bread with one meatball. The little man felt very bad. One meatball was all that he had. In his dreams he hears that call. You got no bread with one meatball. One meatball. One meatball. Get no bread with one meatball.
That was Roy Bookbinder's One Meatball from his album Hillbilly Blues Cats. Also, I should have mentioned earlier the Rag Mop song I played after Richmond's submission. That was Lionel Hampton from the legendary Decca recordings. Well, I thought that story was a real tearjerker, Shane. Thank you for that. Really well done. So that's all of our local submissions from people that we know around here, but we do have some more stories of first jobs from the KGUA Writers Show, which inspired this one.
Mm-hmm.
So if you haven't heard the story, I'll just keep it short. It's a small community radio station out in Gualala, California, on the coast of California. And they've been doing this for 4 years now. They started at the beginning of COVID and as an idea to kind of draw the community together over the radio, and started having weekly prompts. And we took this prompt idea from them, actually. And
do all their submissions come in written form?
No, they get both written
they do.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. I don't remember. Like, we have four of them here I extracted from their show. I don't know if we'll get to them all. I think we probably will. This was a written one, and I really liked the way the host, Peggy Berryhill and Mark Sanford Gross, are the hosts for the KGUA show. And I thought Peggy did a great job of reading this. So we're going to hear about this young teenager's frustration with her predicament.
I'm going to read from Colleen Sandrin. I'm bored. It's summer, and I'm stuck around this motel my parents just bought. Just going into my prime years now, and I'm in a new town, no friends, so unfair, so boring. I'll go to the pool for a while. I think that's okay. Maybe I should ask. Do this. Don't do that. Stay away from here. Smile when you're there. So many rules. They make me mad. I don't want to move here and buy a motel. Why am I being punished? I'm not a child. 14 is not a child. Sheesh. Smile when I'm in front of those paying money to stay a night or two. Why? They've already paid. I'll never see them again. But here it goes. Smile for the camera. Jeez. My name is Peter, and I do not want to be here. Why do I have to go to the room right off the lobby to get breakfast? What are my parents thinking? This is going to save their marriage. Let's buy a motel in Colorado and start all over, honey. Seriously? Start over after the best surprise of your life? Me. Started your life together? I need a walk. Oh, a nice surprise today. A 16, maybe 17-year-old new housekeeper. Cute, I say. Hey, hi. She turned around, smiled, and said, hey, being from the big city, my swag said, I've got an extra banana, holding up the yellow piece of fruit. Do you want it? She laughed, shook her head, and then she was gone with her cleaning supplies, cart full of sheets and towels, and those little soaps you always wonder if they're worth putting in your travel bag. Lunch at the motel, too. so tired of meat trays, breads, fruit, chips. We definitely aren't a 4-star motel. 2.5, maybe? God, I hate this. I refuse to eat another lunch in the room off the motel lobby. At least some fresh air while I eat my banana, please. Walking through the grounds, I tossed my banana peel. I'm a good kid. Why is this happening to me? And then I went to the pool. And that's how I got fired from my first job as a housekeeper at the motel in Boulder. Peter threw his banana peel right through the open bathroom of room 122 that I had just cleaned. The next guest the next day was not amused when they found it in the bathtub. So after less than a month, I was fired from my first job. The first, but not only, Peter I encountered in my lifetime. Not the only Peter I encountered in my lifetime.
And maybe not the only banana peel.
I was a little confused there at the end about whose banana went where, but anyway, that was a fun story, I thought. A friend of mine, actually right in town here, I had one more local submission, but the sound was so terrible from, I had recorded it on my phone, I wasn't able to share that. But Lynn, who worked first, I think it was the Grand Hotel out in West Duluth, she talked about cleaning rooms, having to work with a woman who had to take 3 smoke breaks during their short work stint together. And that was her first job, also around age 15, I think. Then I thought this one was fun. This is all from KGUA. Not the job itself, but sort of the office drama around the job. This is Mitch.
My first job, by Mitch Safkos.
Mm-hmm.
My first job was amazing. It was exactly what I wanted to do and more. The exactly part was that I got a job as a naturalist educator at a nature center. The more was the crazy, loony, eccentric, and like-minded people I worked with. I had just received my undergraduate degree in nature interpretation. I was living at home with my parents, aggressively birdwatching. Aggressively birdwatching. That's a great term. Which means I would drive hours to glimpse a new species. And I saw an advertisement for a summer naturalist. I applied, got an interview, and during my interview, the director and I walked the preserve. I suspect my answers to his dumb questions were patently consistent with everyone else's. But then, as we walked and talked and identified this and that, he not only made an error, I diplomatically corrected him, it wasn't a test, he was just wrong. I was right, and I got the job. What fun it was to lead public walks through the forest trails. Less fun but interesting to go into schools to give live animal demonstrations. Into the classrooms I went with rabbits, owls, hawks, and snakes. Kids love learning when they can hold things in their hands. But the joy of the work resided in the insanity of the people I worked with. The administrators drank all the time. The office manager was having an affair with the board chair. Naturalist educators got paid intermittently and, when paid, received little money. There was tumult and chaos everywhere. And in our own simple way, we were bohemian. Most of the naturalists smoked cigarettes, and together in cheap dark bars, we drank pitchers of beer and talked about birds, the lewd office affairs, and the stupidity of the public. And we laughed as we prayed that grants would come through so we could keep our jobs. I miss those carefree days. I suspect little has changed for young and new college graduates in the nature study. And while I wish I made more money throughout my life, I am glad I didn't go into finance. And I'm happy to look out my window and know the bird on the red maple outside my window is a downy woodpecker.
So, yeah, we've heard about lots of good works.
And hopefully it has jiggled loose a story of your own that you can share with us.
Right, because we are using the same prompt for next week. And anything that we receive by Wednesday night is pretty much guaranteed to get in that next Saturday's show. Let's see, what will that be? April 6th? Wow, yeah, April 6th. And as we mentioned before, you're also welcome to respond to older prompts, songs that you identify with, or what you think of this winter now. Actually, it's coming up as another subject of conversation.
A refreshed subject, yes.
Yeah. And let's see, the businesses, if you have any afterthoughts like Becky did about businesses you're remembering that we used to have here. I've had some. Did I talk about the shoe repairs? Shoe repair shops?
Not to me, no.
Oh, in the good old days, there was even more than one. There was one on, I might have talked about this before, but it was on either 8th or 9th Avenue. I remember it was on the inland side of 7th Avenue. It's just in a little house. And, yeah, inspired me to think I was going to be a shoe repair person for a while there. And then I got sidetracked into something else.
That's a business I truly value.
Yeah.
Seamstress. Yeah. Seamstress and
yes.
Shoe repairs.
Yeah, and they're hard to find now. I think Tom Kohler had mentioned that because that was back. That's right. He did refer to shoe repairs back when they made shoes that would
were
last.
Good enough to be repaired.
Yes, yeah. Yep. Anything else we should tell the listeners, I wonder?
If you're going to submit the answers to the prompt, send them to ktwhwriters@gmail.com.
Thank you.
If you're going to send us a voice memo, use the voice memo app on your phone and send it to that email address as well.
Mm-hmm. And if you really want to be totally anonymous, you can put it in the mail. Put a hard copy in the mail and we'll read it. And we have a P.O. box for the radio station. It's P.O. box 622. Two Harbors.
Nobody writes letters anymore.
I have written twice, two letters this winter, actually physically in the mail that went overseas, actually. But in both cases, we communicate regularly, either both by email and by a WhatsApp type of app. But in honor of the holidays, I actually sat down and wrote a letter, and it felt really good.
Yes.
Yeah, hope it... inspire. I'm still waiting for the replies.
Well, writing by hand with a pen and paper in the real world is a nice experience.
It is, and I hear that kids growing up these days don't even know how to write anymore because they write so little.
At first I had thought it was just script, that script was going by the wayside, but it is indeed writing at all.
Wow, yeah. Yep, pretty sad state of affairs, I think. So, okay, well, tune in next week, same time, same place, 11 o'clock, Saturday. If you came in on the middle of this and want to hear it again from the beginning or just want to hear the whole thing again or tell someone else about it, 9 p.m. on Mondays, we replay this entire program. So I guess we'll sign off and... thanks for being here, Frances.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll close out this episode with a nod to Women's History Month, which is just drawing to a conclusion. This is Working Woman by Ruthie Foster.
She's kicking ass and taking names. She's punching that clock, she's climbing that ladder, she's spinning those wheels. She can do your job 10 times better and do it in heels. So get your glass up for the working woman. When you gotta get it done, call the working woman. This place, from a mop and a broom to a corner office and a big old desk, everybody knows ain't nobody knows like a woman how to clean a mess.
to get your glass up for the working woman. When you gotta get it done, call the working woman. Thank God for the working woman. This country's run by the working woman. All day, no vacation time, no minimum wage. She's a nurse and a boss and a coach and a maid and a wife and a mother. If you paid her for half of what she does, you couldn't afford her. So get your